Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Online, on your mobile, and on FM.
From the home of time.
This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
So good evening and welcome to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. This is the big match preview. My name is Louis Mendes. Joining me in the studio here at the Valley as we look ahead to Saturday's League One tie with Oxford United is Tom Wallin. How you doing, Tom?
Good, thanks, Louis. How are you?
Yeah, good. First big match preview for you in a while.
Yeah, a little while, but I'm back.
Have you missed previewing big matches?
I have, yeah. I've been reviewing. Well, I reviewed one.
You reviewed one, but you haven't previewed
it's
any.
Not the same.
It's not the same. It's a completely different kettle of fish, really, isn't it? On tonight's show, we're going to talk about last night's meeting between the club owner Roland Duchatelet and some members of the Target 20K group. We're going to hear quotes from my source who was in the meeting. We're going to look back at Tuesday's encouraging goalless draw with league leaders Scunthorpe United. We're going to hear from Russell Slade and from Kevin Foley. We're also going to hear what a local recommended I should get up to in the 8 hours I had to kill in Scunthorpe before the match. Of course, we're going to look ahead to this weekend's game at the Kassam Stadium against Oxford United, including possibly the worst Charlton connection we've ever done.
And the worst we'll ever do, I think.
Yeah, well, I don't know. Let's not set our sights too high,
that's
shall
true.
We? Right, so last night, as was leaked, it was leaked on Twitter, which is the best place to leak all sorts of things. There was a secret meeting between the Target 20K group, a group of fans who have come together to try and work with the club and try and come up with ideas of how to get 20,000 through the door again. Currently, we're falling about 10,000 short, but we're getting there. And of course, the Roland Duchatelet, who's had his critics over his time at the club. So we found out there was a meeting. I got to worked a couple of my contacts just to find out if anyone I knew was there and if they could tell me what was going on. And I spoke to a couple of people. One of whom was it's going to remain anonymous, but was happy to tell me what happened during that meeting. The thing I found interesting was the fact that the Target 20K committee were asked to stay quiet and to not announce about this meeting or what had happened in this meeting until after the club had gone through and written it up and put it out there. Which, for starters, I mean, if you're looking for open communication, a secret meeting with a certain select group of fans, which then those fans are told they're not allowed to talk about until the club have put out their version of the meeting, I mean, that's not the way to go around things in my book.
No, it just sums it up, doesn't it, really? You know, sneaking back in, meeting with only a select group of people, waiting for it to be published on official channels. Obviously, they can then tailor it and doctor it how they need and how they want to make it look. And yeah, it's not the way you want to go. The whole thing has been about communication. He even said, apparently, in this meeting that he admits communication has not been great, and this is a perfect example of it carrying on. You know, you could have announced the meeting. I'm not saying you can invite anyone in, because obviously I'm sure he knows what would happen in that scenario, but could be a bit more open about it, you would hope.
So I got my source. It was giving me a couple of snippets of information, and I checked they were happy with for me to share this information, and it goes forward. So, I mean, the standout one for me was my source telling me that Roland was asked why he doesn't seem to spend as much time with Charlton, yeah. My source told me that he doesn't commit as much time as he could, as apparently Charlton only equate to about 1.5% of his income/resources. So, I mean, obviously the actual definition of income and resources are obviously wide open, but effectively what Roland was saying that this is 1.5% of his empire. That's as much as it means to him, unfortunately. And when you compare that to what it means to us and to the fans out there, I mean, it sort of makes sense as to why we feel like we've been a bit neglected. If it is like his massive multinational companies with all sorts of different things, we're just basically like not that important, are we?
Yeah, there's a few things on that comment really. First of all, it comes across as a massive put down. Whether he meant it that way or not, or whether he simply meant in a business sense, this represents that small portion, and that's why I don't spend as much time for it. And, you know, other places represent 40 or 50% of my income, and that's where I spend my time. Logically, that makes perfect sense. I understand that. But to a group of passionate fans that aren't customers of a business, they're fans of a football club, it just comes across as a massive put-down. I think, secondly, the reference of the percentage, he knows about the whole 2% and how the fact that 2% has become a thing, however he chooses to see that, however Katrian chooses to see it, and however the fans choose that, he's aware that this 2% has been going around for a long time. I'm not saying he's specifically chosen that as a dig, but the fact that he has said that, you would think he would recognise again that that's going to get picked up on. And the third thing I really think is that if that is the case, and we are just 1.5% of his empire, and you know we're just this little tiny thing on the corner of this massive empire he's got, then why is he here? What's his plan? You know, it's the same question again. What's he doing with us? Why does he want us? Because it makes it sound like we're just a plaything for him, really. And we don't matter financially. He's just going to have his way, you know, until we break, and then he'll move on and buy something else. And that's the thing that's most worrying, I think, because over the past few months and with all the protests we had towards the end of last season, I think fans felt they were making headway in, you know, we were going to get this club back, and I still believe we will, and we will beat them, but it sounds like he's perhaps going to be sticking around a little bit longer than we hoped.
Yeah, as you say, with the fact that we seem somewhat insignificant to him, I mean, the way you after that comment, the way you have to choose your words in any meeting, no matter who it is, I mean, this is football. If you're having a secret meeting, it's getting out there.
Yeah.
You know, people will speak to journalists, people will speak to other football fans, people put on the forum. Now, you have to choose your words so carefully, and it doesn't feel like what happened there, really.
No, and it's not like he's had no, you know, experience of this. He knows that everything that Katrien has said in previous things has been picked up on. He hired a PR person to sort all that out, then fired them, and then released his own statement on the website. You know, these things have happened, so he knows that things get picked up on. He knows how the fans are reacting to things. That statement that was posted on a website, presumably by him, that came as a result of the protests and him getting, presumably, frustrated with the reaction of fans. And that got picked up on, so, you know, he's got experience of this. He knows what the Charlton fans are like. He knows how much we care about the club. So to just come out with, as I say, something like that, it's a word we use a lot about Katrien. We've used the word naive. It's not necessarily out to specifically criticise or anything like that, but it is naive, and it's going to get picked up on, and that's exactly what's happened again.
There was some other comments that I was told that were said. As I was told that Roland Bizarrely, this is the source saying that, talked about how rugby fans make a day of it, and he likes the setup of fans mingling. So, I mean, that's obviously, we know that Roland's talked a lot about the match day experience and that sort of thing. He's obviously talking about, because then I then asked my person, like, what did he say about football? Because that is still that is still generally the reason I come down channel, trying to watch the football.
You don't come down here for rugby.
No. You know, Blackheath for that. And I was told that Roland's on football, he didn't say too much. He said we're unlucky to lose on Saturday and certainly not looking to sack Russell Slade, which is good.
Good.
The fact that obviously someone asked that question, I'm guessing. Apparently Roland said that the usual that mistakes had been made, etc. Very open about that. My source added, and then I asked this person, was Thomas Dreisen brought up, the Phantom Underpants Scout Man? They replied, yes, he was brought up to. Katrien answered in a way that suggests he's still involved as one of the many scouts, but that Russell Slade has the final say on transfers. And we'll come to the club's response to the meeting later, and that is confirmed. I mean, everything that my source told me was has pretty much been confirmed, although slightly different wording, obviously, on the club website. He finished, the meeting generally seemed to go well. He even wrote down some notes when we explained why we were doing it, how long we've been fans, etc. So, I mean, I guess some members of the Target 20K felt that things went well and this was a positive meeting. I mean, it's hard to say when you're not there, but when you see the reaction to the, especially the 1.5% quote, which was the most painful. I mean, that, to be honest, when I was being given all these information, I wasn't really sure what I was going to do with it until the 1.5% quote came out. I was like, right, let's go to Twitter.
Exactly.
Because then that needed telling.
Yeah, and it's immediately going to become a thing because we were the 2%. Are we now the 1.5%? You know, it immediately lends itself to Card and the protesters and the campaigns against him to, you know, to have a new avenue. I think on the football thing and him not discussing that too much, it comes across ever since he bought the club, really, that football, that what happens on the pitch is just a vehicle to his money, really. All he cares about is what's happening in terms of the financials and whether we're a success or not in that sense. I don't think he's that worried about the standard of football, what league we're in. You know, if he was making money in League One, which I know he's not, but if he was, I don't think he'd be that fussed about whether we're doing that well or not. You know, you see Mike Ashley in the Premier League, well, back when they were, he wasn't that fussed. So long as he had a manager keeping them stable in the Premier League, he didn't really care. He had no ambition. And it just comes across like that, really. But, just in general, I think, I don't know, I don't want to criticise Target 20K, really, because the group is set up with quite a good initiative in mind in terms of building the fans and getting that group back together. But we're so far away from that now. It's a bit of a redundant concept at the moment because there's other things that need to be focused on, and I just wonder, you know, exactly what that group are able to do at this stage. As I say, I'm not looking to criticise any of them in particular. I'm sure they've got their reasons for being on it, but it doesn't really seem to serve its purpose just at the moment, because that's not something we need to focus on. What we need to focus on is, but well, for a lot of people, getting rid of Roland, but if nothing else, just pulling all these fans back together and making ourselves a proper club.
Right, so the club, as predicted, responded to the meeting themselves on the website today. We're told that Roland thanked Target 20K for their hard work before answering questions members of the Target 20K group had about the club. It says, the below provides a top-line summary of what was discussed in the question and answer session. It says, Duchatelet said he runs many businesses, and while he watches Charlton games from abroad, he leaves the day-to-day running of Charlton Athletic in the hands of Katrine Mayer, Russell Slade and the club's senior management team. So obviously that's a slightly different take on the...
Yeah.
You're just like the dust on my shoe, which I've gaffer-taped him. you know, you're 1.5% of my bothered. A slightly different take on it. I mean, when you read it that way, then that's sort of that they've obviously worded it a bit better than Roland perhaps did. But it still does sort of comes back to the fact that, well, you know, we want an owner who's here thinking everything about the club. We know you've got a CEO running it, but with all due respect, things haven't gone too well yet. I know. Hopefully, Russell Slade is, you know, taking over really charge of the, as many things as possible here at the club and trying to turn things around. But
yeah.
You know, the best way for a club to run surely is an owner, a single-minded owner who's only really, you know, concentrating mainly on the club. Maybe he's got other irons in other fires, but, you know, he's given a lot of time to the club and we're all pulling together in one direction sort of thing. Because, you know, Roland's made decisions. Like, if Roland's saying, oh, he's hardly here, it's only 1.5% of his time. He's made some big decisions for this club about managerial stuff, about, you know, he's the man with the purse strings when it comes to signings in the end. So yeah. You're either part of it or you're not. If you're only gonna step back and say, I'll stick my head in every other Tuesday.
Yeah.
Then do that. Don't be part of this big decision making thing. It doesn't make sense.
That's why it comes across as almost a toy, you know. And I think there was a song, wasn't there, by the protest group that we're more than just a toy. But that's how it seems to him. It's almost like he leaves it to these people. And they ring him up and basically ask him for money. And he goes, yeah, go on then, if he wants to, or no, I'm not going to. And like you say, we need an owner that cares. He has no idea the amount of passion and heart some of these fans put into the club. Not just now, but back in the day. We've been over it again and again and again, how much these fans have saved this club before. And, you know, surely he knows those stories, surely. And those people invest so much of their lives. People who have long gone, people who haven't even been born yet, are gonna, you know, invest so much of their lives into this club because we're not just customers, we're fans, we're passionate fans. You know, if you become a Charlton fan, the majority, you're going to stay there for life, whether you know, through the hard times and the good times. And to then have an owner that comes in and goes, yeah, well, you know, you don't really, you're not that important to me. I leave my running to other people. And I note that he sort of tag Slade onto that comment, but basically he leaves it the running up to catch in. And I know Slade's done his best to pull through, and I think we're all grateful for that. But you know, she's still the CEO. She's in charge as this side of the water.
Hmm. Overseeing the Pilates class we walked in today. That was a strange one.
Yeah. But, yeah, it's just so frustrating because, like you say, you want an owner that can take care. You look at someone like Middlesbrough. Their owner doesn't get in the headlines a lot. He's not a massive name. But he's just going about his work as a fan of that club. And look what he's done for them. And those fans have... I know a couple of Middlesbrough fans. They've got nothing but positive things to say about him. And it's just so frustrating that we've fallen so far away from that. And it doesn't sound like Roland's in any hurry to change anything from his point of view.
Yeah, and perhaps backing up that feeling that... You know, whereas some things have changed with the likes of Slade and the better British players that are coming in, Thomas Dreisen's still part of the club. Yeah. I mean, it's the way that my source explained it to me, he said that Katrine answered that question, but sort of tried to answer it not too directly, but it's been now confirmed on the club website. Thomas Dreisen is a part of the club's extensive scouting network, but the manager, Russell Slade, very much has the final say on transfers and match day selections.
So why is he there then? Because surely Russell isn't going to pick any of the players that Thomas suggests. So if that's going to happen and Russell has the final say, why is he even there in the first place? I just don't get it. And again, it's got that feeling of a toy because this kid's come along. He's emailed him about his stats and Roland's gone maybe fairly originally. Yeah, let's give him a chance. Why is he still kind of going along with it? Why is he still allowing it? It's been proven not to work. If Russell has the final say, Russell's not interested in it. Russell can bring his own scouting network in. Just get rid of the kid. He doesn't need to be here. He needs no involvement in this club. He didn't need any to start with, and somehow he did. But now, just get rid of him. It's just, and yeah, like you say, just another thing that kind of adds to that feeling that there are some of his methods that just aren't going to change.
Yeah. AFKA Bartram, Danny on the Charlton Live forum, says, "Hi, Charlton Live. Please tell Roland to leave," in not so many words. And then Soapy Jones says, "Hi, Charlton Live. Soapy from Medway here. I wonder if you could relay a message to the management of Charlton. You are rubbish. Thank you." So, yeah, keep your feedback coming in. Don't forget, you can tweet us at Charlton Live this evening. You can email us, studio@charltonlive.co.uk. If you want to come up with any points, Ashley Peters has said that she needs to make sure she's on the earlier train home next Thursday so she can listen to Charlton Live without tunnels and bad signals. Don't forget, you can listen to Charlton Live on the go on the TuneIn app. We had an email earlier from Rob Snow. He said, "The latest attempt at positive communication from the club following RD's visit feels so insincere and half-hearted. Answers that are carefully worded and vague show there is still a real lack of desire to truly connect with the fans. Do you guys believe there is a genuine desire by Roland and Katrine to rebuild trust, or is it just a PR damage limitation exercise?"
The second one, I think. But it's just a personal point of view. Obviously, I don't know. I have no insight, but that's the feeling I get. He's obviously done this interview on the sly. He came over earlier this year and did an interview with the press, but it was select. It was just Rich, wasn't it, I think?
Yeah.
And it was a one-on-one interview, you know. I think he's probably well aware that a lot of the stories that happened, especially towards the end of last year, have made national news. And I'm sure there would be journalists in the sporting world that would happily sit down with him and ask some questions from the larger papers and that sort of thing. But it's just not going to happen because I think he's too worried about what's going to come out, because I think he knows as well as we do that he's not really fussed about the club, and I don't really see how he's going to make it seem like he is, because everything that he says, nothing that he says really reassures me that he cares that much about us. So, as I say, I've got no insight into it at all, but from my point of view, I only see it as a PR thing. I don't really see it as a genuine attempt to sort communication out.
It's funny enough, because one of the points that the club on the website is, Du Châtelet said that the club's communication had been poor during his time at the club and required improvement. Now, if I had a pound for every time I'd heard that, you know, I wouldn't have had to go at the £8 megabus to Scunthorpe on Tuesday, would I? I mean, how many times have we heard that during this? And as pointed out by numerous people, I think you've already mentioned it once. I mean, Joe Hall picked it up. Journalist Joe Hall on Twitter earlier, is like, this: a man saying he's going to improve communications, who hired a head of communications and then went over her head to release that crazy, crazy statement back in March time, wasn't it, where he accused the fans of wanting the club to fail. I mean, it feels like a case of they're saying one thing and doing but another.
I don't get why you would keep saying it, because all you're doing is admitting your mistakes. If every month or every couple of months him or Katrien has a Q&A session or one of these things and they come out and say communication's not good, everyone who's there is well within their rights to go, yeah, but you said this a month ago and a month before that and a month before that and a month before that. And if you're having to say it that many times, then all it shows is that communication's not improving. Either just admit that it's rubbish and it's going to stay that way, or do something about it. Because, like you say, they brought in that head of PR, and that was supposed to be changing it around. And then they realised that what better communication meant, and then they pulled the plug on that as well. So it's just, it's so frustrating to hear the same stuff over and over again. It doesn't feel like we're getting anywhere with him. And this, as I say, this meeting represents that again, the fact that he's come over on the sly, he sneaked in, he's met with specific people. That's poor communication as well. They could have, you know, you don't have to invite anybody else, but they could have announced it. But again, they're probably out of fear of what Card or certain people might have done, you know, arranging protests or even just being around the ground. He doesn't want to be seen like that. He doesn't want journalists picking up on it. He wants to be able to just get on with it his own way. And that's not the way to run a football club. But, you know, nobody needs me to tell them that. I think we're quite aware that that's the case.
Yeah, email in from Mark Wilson says, "Dear Charlton Live team, the people who are running Charlton cannot see how poor their actions are, and therefore they surely don't care. There are three standout items from the meeting that was announced. Despite the fact that Katrine Mayer told fans that changes will be made, Thomas Dreisen is still part of the scouting network. This clearly demonstrates they have not learned the appalling lessons that should have been learned from the day Thuram entered Sparrows Lane and asked to meet Chris Powell. Number two, Roland du Châtelet thinks he can adopt some of the social viewing styles of rugby, meaning that the match day experience of watching Charlton and watching rugby can be made similar, despite the fact he has no experience of either. Number three, 98.5% of Roland's time is spent not bothering about Charlton. These will be the things that will be remembered. And for that reason, it was a hopeless, naive exercise by a regime that has utterly lost control of the shape, future and dynamic of the football club. In short, they don't know what they're doing. In addition to the three main points, is there anything else that anyone will remember from the meeting? It's this. The wash hand basin that had nearly been fixed since late last year is still nearly fixed. Charlton, however, isn't." That's from Mark, a very, very exasperated fan from Sevenoaks. So we've been talking about there the meeting between Roland du Châtelet and the Target 20K committee last night here. Well, I think it was at Sparrows Lane. Thank you for your views. We're going to have a quick break now. We're going to listen to the highlights from Tuesday night's game against Scunthorpe.
Cousins, lovely ball into the path of Goodmanson. Can he take his man on? He does. He's trying to be pulled back, but he's in the area. The ball across the middle, Gainey! And there's a goal! Charlton have the lead again. Super work, firstly from Henderson, and rolled it out to Cousins, who did a pinpoint pass into the path of Goodmanson. And instead of Goodmanson going on his own, a slide rule ball across the penalty area, picked out Benekele, who buried his chance, and Charlton a 2-1 up.
Charlton Live.
Solly takes over. Falls back a little bit. A little ball infield. Lovely little 1-2 with Ulverstad. Ball into the box. Cleared away by Luckman. Is Luckman on the edge of the penalty area? Just important tackle from Holmes to stop Luckman pulling the trigger. Morris will find Bishop, and then it's swung across to the opposite side and Tofolo. Tofolo into Holmes. Being forced out by Cross, back to Bishop. Bishop low ball into Tofolo. It's a shot turn coming in, a snapshot at that, coming in from Josh Morris, which looked to have evaded the outstretched hands of Declan Rudd, but also evaded the left-hander post.
As Morris has gone down to the right-hand side to take a left-footed in-swing delivery. He's played it short to Holmes. Looks for the give-and-go with Morris. Morris goes for the near post shot. It's cut out by Rudd. Almost caught him out. Declan Rudd was aware of it. Little chip ball forward. Finds Allstead, who brings it forward for Charlton. Now McGuinness on the edge of the penalty area. Looks right for Solly. Solly cuts back to Jackson, who's cutting on his left foot. Will look for the cross. And it's headed forward by Ulverstand. Just gone wide. Took a deflection on the way. Chris Solly takes a touch. Chip ball forward. Looking for Foley. Controls it. Closed down by Wallace, who's forced wide. It's a good ball inside, though, towards Solly. He's in the penalty area. It's a ball cross goal, and no one was there.
Superb cross, that one. Criticised the last one. That was brilliant, but nobody there.
Comes to Fock. Good ball in again. McGuinness gets his head on it and goes wide. There's another good cross from Morgan Fox, and McGuinness rose well and looked like he might have got it on target, but just dragged his header wide. Fox cuts inside into traffic, and it's deflected off Dawson. Fox still battles and does well. He finds Johnny Jackson, who passes inside to Fox again, takes a touch, will go for goal. It looked like he might have taken a deflection, but he didn't. It's just a wayward shot in the end from Fox. Now Bishop brings it forward into Charlton's half. Good pressure from Bauer on Madden, but he falls to Bishop, who can advance forward. Bishop goes for goal, but it's cut out by Rudd. He looked for the far corner there. Neil Bishop advanced forward. Difficult opportunity to get a real shot away, but he did so. Rudd was able to cut out with ease. And there's the half-time whistle. Charlton have had a fairly decent first 45 minutes, certainly for long periods of it. Fox crossing opportunity, looks for McGuinness, it falls for Jackson. Oh. It's a good touch, but it's cut out, comes to overstep in the edge of the box, loops towards goal. It's easily caught by Daniels. There's a great tackle in there, I think from Wallace. Jackson had a chance to control.
The first touch from the skipper was just a little too heavy, and by the time he'd tried to get back on it, Wallace had got across.
Solly, good ball inside to Foley. Looks at the give and goes. A little bit heavy, but Solly will have it again. Solly, good ball into the box, over the head of McGuinness. Jackson was running in, comes to Overstead, goes for goal. It's a save by Daniels. It's a good connection from Overstead, who had more time than realised.
Solly is there. Goes back to Dawson. Picks it into Van Veen, who gets a touch, and that's an important tackle from Pierce. And it cannons off the Dutchman and goes out for a Charlton goal kick.
Yeah, great tackle from Pierce. There's a good first touch from Van Veen in towards the penalty area, and Pierce had to get a touch onto it, and it deflected off Van Veen. Charlton a bit lucky that the ricochet didn't go towards goal. Lovely ball.
Overstead, lovely ball from Overstead out to Morgan Fox on the left. Crossing opportunity, gets the ball in the box, it'll drop to Pataka over the bar with a goal gaping at his mercy.
It's and a difficult the substitute
has put it over the bar.
It's a difficult one though, Terry. It's a good ball in from Morgan Fox. It just bounced out for Pataka, who controlled it with his right. It's sort of a half volley in his left foot. It's an awkward one. If he hits the target, it's more than likely a goal. He's blazed it over.
To Mantum. Mantum tries to pick out Adelaken on the Charlton left. He cuts back inside. He's in the penalty area. Shooting opportunity. Block. Superb block by Pierce. So that left-hand edge of the goal is gaping for the skipper, who's standing over the ball now. An angled run into this left-footed free kick as we wait for the whistle. Some argy-bargy in the wall.
He's done it before, Jacko.
There, left-footed. Johnny Jackson steps up, takes a shot. Off the post! Off the left-hand edge of the post and out for a goal kick.
Oh, it looked like it was creeping in for a second. I think it just bent, the little bend right at the end. Hits the post, it's given us a goal kick, so the goalkeeper definitely didn't give anything on it. I thought that was going to have the winner here.
No chance to take it as the final whistle goes here at Glanford Park. It's finished all square. Scunthorpe United 0, Charlton Athletic 0. But it doesn't tell the story of the game really. Charlton with plenty of opportunities.
So there we heard the highlights from the goalless draw of league leaders Scunthorpe United on Tuesday night. If you hear from the highlights, we came very close to winning it, and I think we could have argued we deserved to win that game.
Yeah, I listened on the radio. It was sounded like a really exciting game. The commentators were saying Rudd didn't have a huge amount to do, really. It sounded like we were the better team. But obviously, you hear in the highlights there, we created a lot of chances. You know, they'd scored, I think, 12 goals had they at home, and they'd won all three games, and so yeah.
They're on a 7-game winning streak at home at the end of last season.
So a real force at home. So I'm sure there's going to be people around that go, you know, a team like Charlton shouldn't have to play a team like Scunthorpe, but that's where we are now, and we've gone to the league leaders who've got that fantastic record at home, and we've not only held them, but we arguably could have got the winner, and obviously Jacko so close at the end there, so... Yes. Yeah, a definite, after the disappointment of the weekend, I think a definite building block, and we've got to make sure we carry that into Saturday now.
Yeah, it was so important to react to that game against AFC Wimbledon. I certainly think we did. I think after maybe 10 minutes took us to get going, then the remainder of the first half, we were well on top. Second half, it was quite open in the second half, but we were definitely the better team. And I said, we saw that Jackson free kick that hit the post towards the end. But I mean, Jordan Botarka had a great chance, and there's one at the start of the second half where a free kick was floated over and didn't quite reach Jason Pierce at the far side. But, and then down the other end, Jason Pierce made two exceptional blocks. Patrick Bauer was back and playing well. You know, these are all signs that, you know, Bauer coming back, chances being created. We feel like we're getting closer to being where we should be. I mean, we've only won twice this season. That's what we've got to remember. And we need to start turning results into performances into results. But, you know, you have to try and take heart from what was a really good performance.
100% you do, yeah. And knowing our luck, we Charlton are going to throw it away at Oxford at the weekend. But Yeah, I thought you talk about Bataka there. That was one of the nice things to see, because one of the things we were quite critical of on Sunday's show was Slade not really making any sort of attacking changes. I know he did light for light with Novak coming on at the weekend, but to bring Bataka on just shows, you know, and I actually wanted him to start, as it was he came on, but he had a couple of chances near the end, and that's the sort of attacking threat we need, because as we said on Sunday, you know, we're going to get to a point where we don't want to just not lose games, we want to go and try and push for winning games, and that's the sort of change that will do that. So I think Bauer coming back as well is obviously fantastic news, because we know, you know, he's a massive favourite with the fans, and he, you know, he was a rock for us at times last season. And Konsa, I've got absolutely nothing against Konsa. I think he's been fantastic and arguably one of our better players, but I think he did need a rest. You know, he is still young, and we've seen with the likes of Carlin and Joe Piggott over recent seasons, we don't want to just blood these youngsters and force them to play game after game. So to have that strength in depth at that position that he can just slot in instead is obviously very reassuring.
If you're going to be hyper critical, which let's play devil's advocate here, would you be tempted to have bought Bataka on a bit?
It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Burrow's furniture is built for the way you live. From ensuring easy assembly and disassembly to honoring highly requested new colors for their award-winning seating, they always have their customers in mind. Their modular seating is made out of durable materials to last and grow with you. And with Burrow, you always get fast, free shipping. Get up to 60% off during Burrow's Memorial Day sale at burrow.com/ACAST. That's burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Earlier, I think came on with about 8 minutes left, and he played a part in a chance and had his own chance. He's got, you know, obviously if you bring on an attacking sub, you risk opening yourself up for Scunthorpe to try and push home for themselves. But you know, he made a bit of a difference in the time. What if he was on for another 10 minutes? Might that have made the difference?
Possibly, yeah. I think as listening to the commentary, as I say, I know we were creating a lot of chances, so you could look at it either way. I think you could argue that Russell could say, well, look, we're creating chances without him. I'm happy to just give it, and I do want to protect our goal at the same time. Or you could think we're creating all these chances but not quite getting that finish. Let's throw some new blood on there and see if that's the difference that will, you know, change a goal-bound shot to an actual goal. So I see it from both points of view. I think, you know, he has been accused of being too defensive in the past, and I don't think we can give him that just because he's brought this player on late myself. But yeah, that's certainly a point of view that many people might have.
Right, let's hear what Russell Slade had to say. Later on in the show, we've got a couple more emails and tweets about the meeting between Roland and Target 20K. If you want to get anything in, email studio@cheltenlive.co.uk. You can tweet us at Cheltenham Live. But this was Tuesday night after the goalless draw with Scunthorpe United. Russell Slade came out to tell us how he viewed that one.
Russell, goalless draw with Scunthorpe tonight. What did you make of that?
I thought it was a really solid performance. I thought we created a few openings, more than them. I thought we took the ball really well, played some good football, but we didn't quite get the goal that perhaps we deserved. It was a really solid away performance against a free scoring side. You know, they've hit Southend for 4 and Gillingham for 5 at home. They never looked like doing that tonight, so credit to my players tonight. I thought our attitude and mentality and the way we moved the ball on their pitch was excellent tonight.
Came so close to winning it late on with that free kick from Johnny Jackson as well.
Yeah, Johnny Jackson had a late chance. Bataka had a late chance over the bar, so we did create opportunities. I thought we had a lot of ball in that first period without creating enough, really. There was only a couple of glimpses. There was a header, I remember, a header that went past the post, and maybe one strike, but we got more strikes off in the second period from some really, really good, intelligent play.
You forced to make a couple of changes today, so you must be happy with how the likes of Bauer slotted back in.
Yeah, no, I was. You know, we're up against two strong strikers for this division who have been a menace so far this season, and I thought that the two centre-backs did an excellent job on them.
Ricky Holmes understands being missing out with back injury. Do you know if that's too serious at this time?
Yeah, it's not too serious, but certainly he wasn't in contention for tonight, and Lee Novak was ill, so they were two blows before the game, really. But, you know, we tinkered with the shape again, but we'd done this in pre-season as well. We'd gone 4-1, 4-1. And, you know, it paid off. It paid off. I thought we took real control in the middle of the park. I thought we were springing out wide, a little bit more composure sometimes in front of goal, and we might well have got a very important win. But look, as I say, we're learning. I think we're getting better. We're going to get situations like Saturday, which are obviously setbacks, even though we played some very good football, attacking football. But I think the signs are good. I think the signs are promising. We just have to keep building on that.
Yes, the way you reacted to that setback on Saturday and played well tonight must have pleased you.
Yeah, yeah, we've come to what is the, you know, mathematically the best side in the league at this stage, and you know, we've more than matched them, haven't we?
Yeah, you must be delighted, Russell, with the reaction to the players, especially when you consider a couple of injuries faced with as well, to come to a side like Scunthorpe, bring in the confidence and control the game for large parts.
No, very good, because we, after Saturday as well, and you lose a couple of players and then the game comes quickly, sometimes it's good for it to come quickly, but in terms of preparation, you don't always have the time that you want. But we did. We talked about it today. We had time at the hotel. We came up yesterday. We studied the opposition and the staff, and we worked hard to come up with a game plan which we thought, you know, may cause them a problem, and we felt as if it did. And I felt, you know, before they made the changes late on in the game, I thought, you know, they'd run out of ideas, really, to hurt us.
Fans might be looking at the line-up at the beginning with Josh McGinnis playing pretty much on his own up front, with the five-man midfield, might be looking at it, I think it might be negative, but it's not the way it panned out at all.
No. I did very much the same last season up at Turf Moor against Burnley, because these play very narrow. They're two wide ones playing very, very narrow. And it's almost like your two centre, they've got the two centre-halves, the two midfielders, and the two wide ones are right in front of the two front men. So it's important that we deal with that situation and then spring out from that situation. And I thought we did, but we're starting to spring out second half. With Addy was getting turned and getting at their back four, exposing their back four very quickly, occasionally as well with Jacko and Josh. You know, he's just so genuine. He's played on his own at front before in Scotland and for his country, and you always know you're going to get a shift out of him.
Overall feelings at the end then, pleased with the performance, but
frustrated. Look, the points are coming our way at the minute, and I think we, you know, we are still on an upward curve, but it still shows, look, we've still got more work to do, we've still got to improve, but we're going the right way.
Charlton Live.
Hello?
From the home of time.
Home of time.
This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
We showed until the last second a good desire, and they got rewarded for it. So they still, the whole team showed that they really want, really want, really want. Want, really, really want. Want, really, really want. Really, really, really.
If you want to be my lover. Welcome back to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. This is the big match preview. Looking ahead to Saturday's game with Oxford United in a minute. Now, I heard from Russell Slade there. He sort of said towards the end, you know, the points haven't just come. They just haven't come over the last few games. For the he feels we're on an upward curve, and performances are improving. Do you think that's fair?
But some people have been very, very critical of our start, and I don't think we've been as bad as that. It has been an okay start. I think we all said on Sunday that, you know, the top two has to be our aim. We have to aim to finish up in those automatic promotion places. The start is not a start that suggests we're going to do that, but it's very early days. He's got a massive job on his hand to turn things around from how we were last year. And the performances, it does look like we're getting there, and the performances are coming, and we're still creating those chances. And you've got to think at some point those goals will come and we'll start to pick up wins instead of draws, because we have been close on a few occasions now, and we're still at that stage of the season where back-to-back wins will probably elevate us into the playoff, you know, places quite easily.
Something like 5 points off the autos.
Exactly.
It's a really tight division.
It is a tight division, I think we're the sort of side, and from the character of those players so far, I think we're the sort of side that can get there. It's taking its time, and perhaps fans are getting impatient and want it to happen quicker than it is, but under Slade, I think we'll get there.
It's got to happen sooner rather than later, you hope.
Yeah.
It's important that, you know, when it comes to that magic 12 game mark, which Russell's talked about a fair few times, that we're in that top six. It's important that by the time that, you know, we've had that chance to gel and to get running, that we're up near the end of the table that we're going to be at, because that's when the table starts to take shape, really. Right. I think we've just about got enough time to hear from Kevin Foley. He came to speak to us after the game on Tuesday as well. He played in a slightly more advanced position than we used to see him, rather than sitting as a sitting midfielder. He was playing quite far forward. But also there was this one fantastic tackle he put in towards the second half, and you'll find out that's actually why the reason he had to come off after this tackle was just as Scunny were bearing down into the box. Let's hear what Irish international Kevin Foley had to say after Tuesday's draw.
Kevin, 0-0 here at Glenford Park against Scunthorpe, and what's the overriding feeling of the players? A good performance, but slightly frustrated you didn't get the win?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, they're a good side. They're top of the table. We've come here with a slightly different shape, and we've played some good stuff. You know, first thing we wanted was a clean sheet, which we got, but, you know, we're a bit frustrated that we haven't scored. We haven't probably hit the target enough. Build-up play was good. But, you know, overall, I think we're happy with that, especially after the weekend's performance. And it's something to build on.
Did the players come here with maybe a point to prove or maybe some scores to settle after Saturday's defeat?
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, you know, we didn't want to be losing, you know, to our local rivals, Wimbledon, you know, like we did. And, you know, it was a disappointing performance all round. So the manager wanted a reaction. The players wanted a reaction. And I thought we started the game really brightly today, you know, but we come up against a good side, and although I think we edged it, you know, we can't be too disappointed with a point.
You must be delighted with your own performance as well tonight. You're being asked to play in several different positions, but a decent shift tonight.
Yeah, I was actually. Obviously, throughout my career, I've probably played a few different positions, you know, right back, right midfield, centre midfield, and today was a slightly bit more advanced, Crofty sitting in there. And, you know, just trying to get in the pockets and link up with Addy and Souls and a few of the boys. And I thought, you know, when we play at one and two touch, we're a much better team. You know, when we go through the motions a little bit, teams can get back into position and set up against us. But I think if we can continue playing one and two touch football, I think the results will come.
Confidence must be reasonable as well after coming to Scunthorpe. We were flying high at the top of the top of the table, so they'd have been a confident side. So to be able to come here and dominate in large parts that we did must be good.
It is good, and obviously, you know, speaking to the coaches there, you know, they've scored a hell of a lot of goals in the last couple of games at home. So you know. When you lose a game, you need to go back to basics. And not only did we go back to basics well and shut them out, but obviously I think we've played really well tonight. And on another day, we could have grabbed all 3 points quite easily.
Two really good chances near the end. John Bateco, the one, and then the skipper with the free kick. Has anybody been brave enough to have a dig at him for missing it?
Well, a few of the boys would say he's got to at least work the goalie there, to be honest. I was right behind it. Obviously, I come off at the end and I thought it was in. He's caught it clean. And Jordan's one as well. You know, he's a goal threat, as he proved last week at Fleetwood. And, you know, today the ball just wouldn't come down for him. But, you know, it's all about being in the right place at the right time. And hopefully he will continue to do that for us.
Well, we'll play today and onward to Oxford.
Yeah, hopefully, yeah. Cheers, thank you.
You have one moment in the second half where you had to make a really good tackle in the penalty area. That had to time that one just right, didn't you?
Yeah, I was just speaking to Deck about it. He just said it was a good tackle. And it was one of them where I could see it, because he wasn't close to the ball. I thought, he's not going to nick it and I'm going to give a penalty away. So I made the tackle, and then my whole body just cramped up. So that's when I had to come off. You know, obviously I've not had a game since the Southampton, which is almost a month ago. So just about getting as long as I could out today. And, you know, I was pleased with my performance, but hopefully we can take it into the Oxford game.
Russell was talking about seeing an improvement as games go on, you know, despite the setback against FC Wimbledon. Are you feeling that the team getting better as you go on?
Yeah, I definitely think so, and I think tonight is a sign of that. And like I say, I think the key thing for me as a player, I think if we can keep it one or two touch and move it simply and quickly, then I don't think many teams would be able to live with us in the division. That's my own personal feeling. So, you know, we have to probably look back at this DVD on Thursday and Friday in training, see what we've done right and see if we can take it into the next few games.
What's your personal opinion on what the target should be for Charlton this season?
Promotion, I think, of 100%. You know, even though, you know, we started a bit indifferently. Obviously, the loss last week put a bit of negative spin on things, but, you know, still the target is the same as we had at the start of the season. You know, we want to get promoted and, you know, a team like Charlton, I know it's a cliche, but, you know, we shouldn't be down here and we should do everything we can to get this team back where it belongs. And, you know, what I will say is it's a great bunch of lads trying their best and working hard for each other, and, you know, no matter what, how many setbacks we'll get, we'll always put a shift in and, you know, try and do our best for the club.
From the home of time, this is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
Welcome back, Channel 9 here on Maritime Radio. Just hearing there from Kevin Foley talking about that goalless draw up with Scunthorpe United up at Glanford Park on Tuesday evening. Now, Glanford Park is an area of Scunthorpe that I became quite familiar with over an incredibly long stay over the space of 2 days. So basically, I'm a proper cheapskate when it comes to away days. And now, if I'm lucky and if I'm working for the BBC, I'll get travel sorted. But often I know midweek games, they tend not to want to fork out for a hotel, so they get one of their own staff to do it. And so I just booked myself travel. The cheapest way to do it was to get the Megabus, which was £8 each way. It was a very good value.
Bargain.
Yeah, but there was only two Megabuses that went to Scunthorpe on the Tuesday, one of which wasn't due to get there till like half five, and I was thinking, oh, say there's a delay or something, then you're due to miss. No,
you don't want to
game.
Miss the sights of Scunthorpe as well.
You miss the game, exactly. So the other one was one that got there at like 11:30 in the morning. So I think I left earlier for that midweek Tuesday night game than I'd done for some away games on a Saturday. I ended up arriving at Scunthorpe, Tesco's, right opposite the stadium, 11:30. It was raining. I couldn't even check into my hotel until I think 3 o'clock, so I had all that time to kill. So I was wondering what to do. I went down, I sort of sat and had a moment to myself in Costa Coffee. I was like, well, how can I make this day slightly more exciting for myself? And I thought, well, the people who know best about how to enjoy yourself when you're in Scunthorpe will be the locals. And I thought the best way to find out about how to enjoy yourself in Scunthorpe is therefore to go out and ask the locals, get them to tell me what Scunthorpe's all about, and, you know, they could advise me how to spend my time. So that's what I did. I got my microphone out and I went into to Tesco's car park and I just went and spoke to a local just to find out what's going on. And they gave me this advice for what I could be doing throughout my 8 hour stay before the game in Scunthorpe.
There's still about 8 hours till kickoff. I thought I'd take you round the town of Scunthorpe and show you a little bit behind what it's like, life as a football reporter on the road. Everyone thinks it's glitz and glamour. It's really not. So let's find out what the locals can recommend for me to do in Scunthorpe. Joined outside Tesco by Catherine here. Catherine, what was Scunthorpe like to live in as a place?
It depends on, I suppose, the age you are. If you're young, going out to a few of the pubs is mainly on a Saturday night. Other than that...
Not a great deal.
No, not a great deal going about, really, no. Yeah.
So I was hoping for some advice from a local, because I've got about 8 hours to kill before the game. What sort of things would someone like me want to get up to in the town that's come up before the game?
On a nice day, unfortunately today, Central Park's normally quite good to have a wander around, and there's a wooded area
Well, I've been in the Tesco's, it's quite a big one. Is that the biggest Tesco's in Scunthorpe?
For Scunthorpe, we've got a big Tesco, Asda, Morrison, so it competes.
And everything seems to be sort of around this area?
This is a new sort of industrialised sort of shopping area.
and the town that way.
The town is straight ahead, yeah.
Cool. So anything you can recommend in the town centre for me to do?
There isn't really a lot in the town centre, just a few shops.
Why I didn't particularly have a very good day in Scunthorpe. All the locals could suggest was nothing.
Shouldn't be on the tourist board, should she?
No.
How long she lived there? Like 5 minutes?
So I ended up just walking around Scunthorpe, literally doing nothing for about 4 hours before there was some excitement. So I walked into the town of Scunthorpe, which is actually about 40 minutes away from where the hotel is and where the ground is. Bloody long walk that was. And decided to get the bus back because it couldn't be bothered to walk back. And the bus went the wrong way. So all the locals started shouting at the bus driver. That was quite entertaining. And then eventually just ended up, could finally check into my hotel room and literally about 30 yards from the ground, apart from going to Frankie and Benny's on my own twice, which I did in the afternoon and the next morning. I just sat there watching Come Dine With Me till the game started.
It was entertaining for me at work, just reading about it, because it made me realise that my day at work wasn't that much better, worse than the day of annual leave.
Yeah, so there was 2 days of annual leave I wasted on that to go and watch them draw 0-0. It was an exciting game, but my advice to any of you going to Scunthorpe is just pay the extra £20, get the train.
Get there at 7:40.
Don't
20 past 10.
Don't hang around like I did. Right, we'll be back in 30 seconds. A couple more emails have come in. And tweets about the meeting between Roland and Target 20K. Then we're going to look ahead to Saturday's game at the Kassam Stadium with Oxford.
Hans Dennis is fed in, lovely touch. Goes round his player, chips across the box. Jackson! Oh, yes! What an goal by Johnny Jackson! Arriving late in the box, Holmes Dennis with a pinpoint cross, and the skipper's given Charlton the lead.
Charlton Live.
Hello?
From the home of
From
time.
The home of time.
This is Maritime Radio, Greenwich.
That's very weird.
Charlton Live.
Welcome back, Charlton Live, here on Maritime Radio. 10 minutes to go as we look ahead to Saturday's game with Oxford. A couple more emails that came in. One email, one tweet in regards to the meeting between Target 20K and Roland du Châtelet, which we were talking about on Twitter last night. I had some quotes from a mole in the Target 20K committee, and they very kindly gave me some information on how the meeting went. The club responded today in how they viewed the meeting, and obviously the standout point is the fact that Roland said Charlton are only 1.5% of his empire, if you will. Yeah. And therefore, that's why he doesn't spend very much time with him. That is pretty much like going to like your grandparents and say, you know, the reason I only pop down every few months is because, come on,
yeah,
I've got other irons in the fire to worry about, isn't it?
I've got people that are going to be around longer, mean more to me.
So anyway, so John Rolfe emailed in to react to what's happened over the last 24 hours or so. He says, this is so depressing. We have to hope that he dies because he won't be selling the club anytime soon. Tell the old Belgian man to go and buy a rugby club instead. Little rugby balls on the pitch, anyone at the Rochdale game? That's an idea for Card, perhaps, to chuck stuff on the pitch. I mean, we haven't had anything like that this season. But
It's been disappointing. We've seen actual football this season.
Yeah. No one's reacted well to that meeting, have they?
No. And as we've said, that frustration, that was, as soon as you put that tweet out last night about the 1.5%, people were all over it. As I say, as you would think he'd expect, but obviously maybe didn't expect it to get out. But people are going to react angrily. From my point of view, rightly so, because you can't come out and say something like that as an owner of a football club. It's the same thing we've said for the last 2-3 years. We're not customers. Whatever they think, we're not. We're fans. We care about the club. We invest a huge amount of our lives into this club, and he's not doing the same. And that's not really showing us any form of respect.
There was one more thing actually that came out during the week, just before kickoff at Scunthorpe. I haven't really had much chance to react to it because I was quite busy at the time. But Jim Dutton, Jimmy Steed's grandson, decided to. I'm not sure exactly what his involvement was, but he was him and the museum, it says, were trying to help get the Jimmy Seed stand sign refurbished, and he's decided to sever any ties himself with getting it sorted. I mean, the club said today it's still going to be done anyway. But Jim decided to make a bit of a stand himself, and I don't know what your view on that one would have been.
I think, first of all, I think that whatever we think of who's in charge of the club, I think it's great that they're still going ahead and revamping it, because it does need doing, and you know, Jimmy Seed's an important man in the history of Charlton, and therefore, if his name's going to be on top of that stand, it deserves to be stood there proudly. In terms of the decision for is it his grandson to step aside? I think I read the statement. I think it's very honest. It's very frank, and I've got a lot of respect for that as well, because he's taken that decision based on what he thinks Jimmy Seed would want him to do, and I completely appreciate that. As I say, I hope that the stand still gets revamped and the sign, you know, is able to sit proudly above the stand. But from his point of view as an individual, I completely understand why he's done it. I think the statement was strong and honest, and full credit to him as well.
Jay Unsworth tweeted in earlier. He says, "How low do you think attendances will get before the club finally do something about the state of the club?"
I don't know. I can't see them dropping a huge amount more, really, because I think if people have bought season tickets this season, I think they're going to be at that core group that, no matter how bad it gets, are probably going to be, you know, say for a couple of hundred maybe, are going to be there or thereabouts. Same with the walk-up fans, I think. You know, I think 8,000 or 9,000, do we reckon, at most games? I know the attendance claims to be more, but I think that's probably more realistic. I'd be surprised if it dropped a lot more than that. Certainly, as much as we're in League One, if we drop down to League Two, then obviously that might be something different. But, you know, even if we were here, let's say we're here for another year, I would expect it to drop a little bit for next season. But, not hugely. But in terms of the club making any difference, I can't see it changing their point of view, because Roland's already said we're only 1.5% of his organisation, and Katrien's come out before and said that the ticket sales are a small part of the club anyway. So doesn't seem that they're that fussed about it at all, which again leads to the question, well, why have they invested in this 20K group, and why are they having meetings with them if they're not that fussed about us as customers, as they call us?
Right, let's turn our attentions now to this weekend's game, Oxford United at the Kassam Stadium. Now, every week we do a Charlton Connection. We find a player who's played for both the Addicts and for our opponents that weekend. Now, we were struggling yesterday. I mean, we generally have to go for players within our lifetimes, because I mean, how would we talk about someone we never saw play? So but even then we were struggling to find any good examples, so we've ended up with two that you've picked.
Yeah,
and they're both absolute belters.
Yeah, so the first one we've got is Onome Sodji, nephew of Sam and Akpo Sodji, who apparently played for us. Oh, came through our youth academy, scored 14 goals in 19 games in the 2003-04 under-17s FA Premier Academy League. Never played a senior game and was released in 2006.
What's he doing now?
He then went on to play for Oxford, only on loan, but played four games in 2009-2010 and scored one goal.
Right.
He then, last thing we knew, he was at Nuneaton Town from 2014 onwards. And there's nothing more that Wikipedia is telling me about his life. So he might still be a Nuneaton.
Yeah, so he's not Oxford for us to give him a nice reception when we go.
Unfortunately,
on Saturday,
not. No.
And now the second one was now this was a proper one. This guy is almost qualified to be our manager, isn't he?
Just about. Yeah, he's Chris White, who, let's see, started as an Arsenal player. He's a defender. Played for Arsenal in 1978 to 1986, so 8 years. 90 games in 8 years, so what's that, 12 games a season-ish? 8 goals in 90 games, which as a defender isn't too bad going. He joined us in 1996. We were one of four clubs he had that year, but that was after he'd had spells with New York Express indoor team and Los Angeles Lasers indoor team.
Just like Nebojša Vinković, he was an indoor warrior.
Los Angeles Lasers, he scored 27 in 77, which isn't bad going.
But does that count? I mean, how big is an indoor pitch?
I'm not sure. assume, yeah, he wasn't just a defender for that.
It was the fact that he then turned from indoor football and then he went back to active football.
Yeah, and he went back to Leeds in the early 90s, when they must have been quite a big club. Scored 5 in 113 for them. Then Birmingham.
So he was brave enough to venture outside again and play for some actual clubs.
And then he joined us in 96, played 11 games and scored once. And then it's still in 96, he went to Detroit Neon, back to the indoor. Played 4 games for them before moving on to Detroit Safari Indoor, presumably a local rival. Played 12 games for them.
Anyway.
And then in 97, he then joined Oxford and played 10 games for them.
And the statue outside the Kassam Stadium is a shrine to all Charlton fans, I'm sure, who are making the trip on Saturday. Now, you're one of the fans who are making the trip on Saturday.
Yeah, a rare away game for me.
Yeah, and what sort of changes are you expecting? What sort of lineup are you expecting from the Addicts?
I'd be, again, I know I was crying out for him last week. I think from the sound of things, Russell from his press conference today is hoping that Holmes will be fit, but it's a back problem. So given that Bataka's played well in his last couple of games, I would still be keen to see him start. I think from the sound of things, McGuinness had a great game up at Scunthorpe, so I'd expect him to stay in. I'd expect the back four to remain the same. So I think maybe, Lookman, Holmes and Bataka, there might be some swap in there. Whether a Jose comes back in, I don't know, but I wouldn't expect Novak to start either, because Russell said in his thing today that he might be a bit weak because it was a bug, I think. So, have him and Holmes on the bench, sure, bring them on if we need them, but hopefully we won't need them. So, yeah, I think much the same starting 11.
You're looking at that Oxford team, they're just a point above us, two places above us. I mean, they're middling at the moment, aren't they? So, like we say, it's just that early season form where you can't really tell what to expect.
Yeah. I think they started badly, but the last three games they're unbeaten. They beat Swindon and beat Rochdale and drew with MK Dons. They've got goals in them. There's a couple of players on three goals already, which I know doesn't sound like a lot, but it's early stages. But yeah, I think probably about every team in this league, we've got nothing to fear. We're one of the big boys in this league, so people are obviously going to try and step their game up against us, but based on what I've seen over the past five or six games, we've got more than enough to beat them, and we just need things to click. We just need that goal to get up and running, like we had at Shrewsbury. We brushed them aside once we got that first goal, and if we can, then we'll be on our way to 3 points.
They haven't lost at home in the league this season. They lost at home to Brighton in the EFL Cup. We ended at someone else's run at home, didn't we, Scunthorpe? So that's what we sort of have to aim
let's
for.
Let's follow that up, yeah.
Yeah, right. So let's have your quick prediction. We've only got 30 seconds or so.
I'd better make it quick then, hadn't I? 2-0 Charlton.
2-0 Charlton, yeah. I'm feeling positive as well. I think we're going to go up there. I think we're going to take it by 2-1, I'm going to go for. But that is your big match preview here on Charlton Live Maritime Radio. Tom, thanks for joining us.
Cheers, Louis.
And hope you enjoy the game on Saturday. I'll be up there as well cheering on the Addicts. Hope you guys will be as well. Thanks for listening to Charlton Live here on Maritime Radio. I'm going to hand you back to Maritime now. Let's hope that Charlton can to earn those 3 points on Saturday. See you later.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.